Okay, we're starting here on the top of Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, the second line down. Mani, who is the author of the Braita that we brought yesterday? We discussed the Braita, we broke it down piecemeal yesterday and discussed each line in the Braita. Tanu Rabbanan, Habuchor Notel Pishnayim Bizroa Ubachayim Ubekeba Ubamukdashim Ubeshevach Sheshibcho Nechasim Nachar Mitat Avien. And then Kate said, we dealt with that Braita. Come over here, says, who's the author of that Braita? Rabbi, it is Rabbi. That's what we discussed yesterday with regards to the fact that Rabbi's position doesn't necessarily reconcile in other places in Shas with regards to Masrot and Trumot, that we view them as Kehumu Damim, and that the Balei Tosafot discussed how we reconcile with Rabbi's position. The Tanya, how do we know this is Rabbi, or why is it Rabbi? Have a Braita. Ein Bechor Notel Pishnayim B'Shevach Shibchu Nechasim Nachar Mitat Aviyem. Everybody agrees that a Bechor does not take double portion in the appreciation of the assets after the death of the father. Now that is only true when it was done in an active manner and an engaged manner. On the other hand, if it happens in a passive manner, then the Chachamim, who are the Tanakam over here, believe that the Bechor does not have Pishnayim. Rabbi Omer, Omer Ani, Bechor Notel Pishnayim B'Shevach Sheshibchu Nechasim Nachar Mitat Aviyem. Rabbi says, yes, you do. You have a right to that appreciation, and there is a double portion to the Bechor. And there he makes the distinction between active and passive appreciation. Then in the case of passive appreciation, the Bechor gets a double portion. In the case of active appreciation, the Bechor has no right. We actually discussed at the end of yesterday's daf how we make that distinction and where that line is drawn. That was what the Gemara drew the parallel between the para that's out grazing and gives birth to a child, to the case of muskeret to muhkeret, in the case where it's rented out, or it's out for profit sharing, there the bechor gets pishnayim, and we said it's because it's coming through a passive form. It's coming without them making any investment or any outlays in the property in order to garner the profits or appreciation. So now, Yashush Darchov, they inherit a bond, Bechor notel pishnayim. In this case, the Bechor takes a double portion. Yatzaleim shtarchov. On the other hand, if a person is a creditor against their father and now is presenting as a creditor coming to collect his debts, Bechor notein pishnayim, the Bechor has to pay double into that. So the right to get double is a two-way street, which is that you get double of the benefits of the assets of the estate, but you also have a necessity to pay double into any deficits or outstanding debts of the estate. Therefore, there might be a situation, v'yamamar, eni notein, v'eni notel. He says, I don't want to give, I don't want to take. Rashai, he has the right to do that. So over here, I just want to go through the different pieces of the braita. There's a fundamental machlok between Rabbi and the Chachamim with regards to passive appreciation of the estate, where Rabbi says the Bechor does get a double portion, and the Chachamim say you do not get a double portion. Then we're going to discuss in 1 second. The Gemara is going to say, what is the reasoning behind each of their positions? Where do they learn that from? Then we had the next line in the Braita that said that with regards to a shtar chov, a Bechor is notel pishnayim. We said that it was seemingly is according to the position of Rabbi. It really depends on how you explain this line in the Braita. But for now, we'll assume, like the Rashbam, that this is only according to Rabbi. The way that the Rashbam explains it is because the shtar is the equivalent of being an asset. The shtar, or the bond that you own, which entitles you to go collect from other parties, is the equivalent of karka, it's the equivalent of any other property of the estate. Then when you receive repayment of the loan, that's the equivalent of hashbacha. It's as if there's some appreciation in the assets of the estate when you get paid back the loan. That's the way the Rashbam explains it. And he says, v'davka milveh b'shtar. That's only true when you have a shtar. V'milveh alpeh, imilveh alpeh, which is an oral loan that's extended, afilu beidin. Even if you have witnesses to that, that is not the case. Afilu rabbi modeh delo shakil pishtayim. There you won't take a double portion, because there you have no asset upon which you can say there's appreciation. There's nothing in hand. You don't have. It's all done in an oral manner. You lent the money. It's an IOU, but it's an oral IOU. And now you can't say that this is something that would ishbiach. It's something that was returned to the estate. but it's not something that existed and appreciated. Whereas if you have a contract, you have a debt agreement, you have a bond that entitles you to collection, the way that the Rashbam phrased it is that you have now an asset that you're holding in hand, and then that asset appreciated when the money comes in to pay back that loan. That is extremely difficult explanation, and it's very hard to understand what the Rashbam is saying. How can you argue that a debt document that entitles you to repayment is considered to be appreciation? How can you claim that there's some underlying value to the document, and then you get appreciation when you get paid back? That's not what it is. The document allows you to collect, and that collection is the value of the shtar, or either you say the shtar is worthless because paper is worthless, or the shtar is worth whatever the value of the outstanding loan is. The reason that mil ve'peh is not considered that way is because the guy can say, parati, I paid it already. So say you can say, parati, you have nothing. You have nothing in hand. But the shtar, he has no way to deny the shtar. The only thing, he can declare bankruptcy, so then you can't get the money from him. But otherwise, you have a right of collection. So it's very hard to understand what the Rashbam says. And the Balei Tosafot on the Amud Bet say about this explanation of the Rashbam, Masha Perish Akuntris, Leel, Gabi Yershu Shtar Chov, B'chor Notel Bishnaim, She Shtar Havi Aguf, Umilve Havi Shevach, that the shtar is the goof of the karka, and the milve is the shevach, Ein Nira. He says, there's no way, you can't say that. So then what's the alternative? The Rabbeinu Gershom gives you an alternative, and he says here, B'chor Notel Bishnaim, Mishom, De Milve Bishtar Kale Itle, a loan or an outstanding loan on a shtar has a kol associated with it, which is what we know, why a shtar allows you shibud nechasim, allows you to have a lien on the property, is because it has a kol associated with it. And that way people will know or be aware of the fact that you can come and collect the property. So if they go to buy from this debtor, they know that someone else has a lien on the property already. Umishum de muchzakim bishtar, since they are in the possession of the shtar, command de gavya dummy. It's as if it is collected already. So what he is saying is that a shtar is so powerful, it allows you a shibud nechasim, it allows you a lien on the property, it's enforceable and baked in. We look at the shtar, kigavui dami, as if it is collected already. Now already, once you have that explanation of the Rabbeinu Gershom, you could speculate and say that this line in the Braita is even according to the Chachamim. Maybe we don't view it as ra'oi anymore at all. Because if you look at the shtar kigavui dami, then even the Chachamim might agree that it's in possession already. You've already, as if collected on this shtar. You could still say maybe this is still subject to their machloket, but at least you have that opportunity. So those are two ways to explain the issue of shtar chov. The other issue which we raised here was the difference between a shtar chov versus milve alpeh. We're going to see on the second half of today's daf that seemingly there is an opinion that there is no difference between milve alpeh and milve bishtar that obviously goes against what the Rashbam is saying over here. And then the next line in the Braita says that if there is a shtar chov, there's a debt document that is raised against them, that the bechor has to contribute double to that. That was pretty straightforward. You get double the benefit, you get double of the detriment or the outstanding debts. But then the next line is the momer, eni notein veni notel rashai. He has a right to decline his portion of the bechorah. So this is interesting. Usually we find this in takanot derabanan. We're very familiar with it from the Gemara in Ketubot with regards to the mizonot of the isha, the woman who is entitled to mizonot from her husband in exchange for a ma'aseh yadayim. So she has a right to declare, I'm going to keep my ma'aseh yadayim, I don't want the mizonot. She can decline that takanat chachamim. The takanat was put in place for her benefit. She can decide that it's not to her benefit and decline it. The bechor is doing the same thing over here, but it's at a doraita level. He says, look, it's nice to be the bechor, it's nice to get the double portion, but I don't want it here. It's not benefiting me. Or for whatever reason, he doesn't feel he wants it, he can decline it. But that's much more interesting because you're dealing with an issue d'oraita, not an issue d'rabanan. When you're talking about a zechut that is given to me d'rabanan, then you can decline that special treatment. You can decline the takanat d'rabanan. But in this situation, how do you decline a din d'oraita? So what the Rashbam points out, it's something that's going to become clear in the upcoming Gemara, is that there's a difference in the way that a Bechor inherits the two portions. One portion is the same portion that all the brothers get, which we call the Chelek HaPshuta, or the Chelek of the Pshitut, which is the basic level of distribution that everybody gets in the Yerusha. Then in addition to that, he gets the double portion, which is the Chelek of the Bechorah. And what the Rashbam notes is that there's a difference between them. The Chelek HaPshitut comes to him derech Yerusha. That is something that he inherits, just like all the other brothers inherit. The double portion that is granted to him, we'll see in a second, the language that's used by the Torah, makes it into a matana. It's a gift that is coming to him. And so therefore, you can differentiate between those two portions. When it comes to a gift, you have the right to decline a gift. You don't have to accept a gift. You can't be forced to take a gift, ba'al korcho. And that's why the Bechor has a right to decline when it comes to the double portion. His base portion is Yerusha. That is something that is put in your hands, ba'al korcha. That is something that you don't have control over. The Torah prescribes that when someone passes away, these are the inheritors, these are the next in line, and they automatically get the Yerusha. It falls to them without any questions or any choice. And for that reason, he cannot deny that or reject that because you become a Yoresh Baal Korcho. So that's the way that the Rashbam differentiates. He differentiates in the fact that one of them is a gift and one of them is a Torah-prescribed Yerusha. When it comes to the Torah-prescribed Yerusha, you don't have control over that. That happens automatically. When it comes to a matana, when it comes to a gift, you have a right to decline a gift. And the Rashbam points out there is a nafkamina. For instance, what happens if the remainder of his brothers are either yitomim, tanim, they are minors, or the remainder of his brothers are overseas? So now the creditor can't come into the Bechor and say, give me all the money, or give me your double portion of it. He has to go after the other brothers now to get it, because the Bechor says, you don't have any right to come after the double portion, I rejected it. I didn't accept it. And then, especially if his remainder of his brothers are minors, then in that case, he can't go after them because Elim Kein Ribi Tochelet. We don't take out of Yitomim until they become of age, unless there is interest eating away at the estate. So therefore, Imbeimen Yochol Kufam Mafsid. And if he can't go after the other brothers, he's going to lose out. Oh! Imalchud Medina Teyamin, we're dealing about Chol Bekarkach, Shamu Beitin Tanat Achin. Or if they're overseas, we wait for them to come back and give their tanot before we take the property. So there is a nafkamina according to the Rashbam, whether the Bechor takes this portion or not. It's how much the creditor has a right to go after versus the other brothers. Or the Rabbeinu Tam over here suggests, Mefaresh, Timamark, Sheyatzei Alav Shtarcho, Bala Bechor Atzmo, Velo Alachim, Enu Notel, Eni Notein, Rashai, Umafsid Bacho, Veinu Al Yitomim Kum. What happens if a creditor comes after the Bechor himself? It's an outstanding debt that is not on all of the brothers, but simply on the Bechor. What the Bechor does is says, I don't want the double portion. And in doing so, he now leaves more property with the other Yitomim. The creditor can't come and say to him, what are you doing? That's my money. How come you're giving it away? He has a right to simply say, I don't want it. It's not similar to the case of the Reisha where they debt is outstanding on all of them. Over here, it's a case where the debt is outstanding only on the Bechor. And so then when he denies the double portion, he's actually saving himself from having to pay the creditor because now that property will stay with his brothers. He can protect the assets by leaving it with his brothers. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. But here over here, the Rashbam brings an alternate view here, which is that the claim here is narrowed to the Bechor saying, you know what? I won't take a double portion in any outstanding debts that were owed to our father. And I also won't pay a double portion in any debts that our father owes. So the Rashbam says that there were those that explained that this statement in the Braita is limited to that situation. The Bechor says, I won't take double portion in credit that's coming our way, and I won't pay into credit that's going out. So Rashbam says it's a shibush gamur. That's a complete mistake. Because the Bechor doesn't have any connection. The connection between collecting from one creditor and giving to another creditor is zero. Because the creditor is only allowed to collect from the karka of the deceased. He's not allowed to collect from the metaltalin. So if the other parties pay back their outstanding debts, then when they pay the debts, it's money into the estate. The other creditors have no right to it. So there's no correlation between the debts collected and the debts paid out. And therefore, the Rashbam says, you can't say that. On the other hand, there are those who want to suggest here that the difference between the double portion and the base portion has to do with the nature of the individual. We spoke about it from the perspective of the assets being given to the Bechor. But you could look at it from the perspective of the individual themselves. When it comes to Yerusha, the nature of a Yerusha is that you basically step into the shoes of the deceased. You become the deceased's replacement in that situation. So therefore, in the case of the Pshitut, or the baseline, that's an area when you step into the shoes of the deceased, you can't walk away from it. You can't release yourself from it because you're automatically placed into it. On the other hand, when it comes to a matana, or the double portion, there you have a right not to walk into it or step into those shoes. A matana, again, is something that cannot be forced upon you. It's something that you have to choose to take. So there's a difference between Yerusha, where you then become the replacement for the deceased, versus the matana, where it's a gift, and there is some distance between you and the asset, and therefore you can determine what happens with the asset. Some explain it that way, but then it does have an nafkamino, which is, do you have a right to deny the Yerusha? So this comes up in a number of places, which is what you ask. Wait, can you reject the Yerusha itself? Can you reject the ability to take the Yerusha just like you reject the ability to take a matana? According to this version or explanation, you can't. You have to step into the shoes of the deceased. You're stuck. You can't do anything. Similarly, you can't throw away your assets or disown your assets to get the creditors off your back. So to over here, you can't walk away from the estate because you're thrown into it automatically. So that's how it's expressed by some, but the problem is that's just not true. You can disown your assets. You can throw off the creditors by giving away your assets. And so there is a way to do that, and you should also be able to do that by Yerusha. So the way that people formulate it is in a slightly altered manner, and you can see that in the Bali at Tosafot, which says, Omeri, Yecholim cholo b'choroto, mishum da'adayin lo atzia liyode, v'afilu b'lo kinyan. So the difference is that when it comes to the chelek of the b'chora, which is a matana, he has a right to deny it without a kinyan. Kedemash from the Kaman. Aval chelek pshitut, lo yecholim cholo selek atzmo ba'amira ba'alma. You don't have ability to separate yourself from the Yerusha by simply articulating. Mlo yedei kinyan. So the way differentiates between the chelek ha-bechor and the chelek of the pashut by saying, by the chelek ha-bechor, since it's a matana, you can simply, by articulating or verbalizing the fact that you do not want it, that already releases you from it. The Yerusha, you have a tighter connection to. So that tighter connection means, yes, you can rid yourself of it, but when you rid yourself of it, you can't just simply say, I don't want it. You actually have to use a kinyan in order to give it away to someone else or to take away that right that you have. So that'll be the difference between the Bechora and the Pshitut. Yes, you can get rid of it, but the threshold for getting rid of it is higher by the Pshitut than it is by the Matana. It's much easier to deny the right of the Matana to come into your possession than it is by the case of the basic Yerusha. But you can do it, but you have to do it through a kinyan. That's the way the Reed deals with it. The Reed's formulation is very important because there you see, and this is an alternate view to the Rashbam, which is that the ridding yourself of a matana is easier than ridding yourself of a pshitut, but it also might have implications in terms of the reversibility of your decision. By the matana, where you can simply, through amira, deny the zchut, in that case, you also can't reverse it. Once you've denied the right, you've lost the right to the gift. A gift doesn't come and keep on giving. It gives once, and when you deny it, it's over. Yerusha is a right that you have, and you can exercise that right at any time. You can decide not to exercise the right, and that's what you do through a kinyan, or you deny it. But you can also decide later on that you do want to exercise that right, and you can exercise it later because Yerusha is a perpetual existence. It's not something that is a gift that all of a sudden comes once, it doesn't give again. It's something that's a permanent state because of your relationship with the bequeather. And because of that, if you decide that you want to change your mind later and take it, you will have a right to do that. By the matana, you don't have that right. So again, those are three different ways to formulate what's happening here. You have the Rashbam who says there's a difference between a matana and Yerusha, whether it can come to you Baal Korcha. You have the view as to whether you're stepping into the shoes of the Yoresh, or in the case of Matana, where that's not the case. And then you have that alternate view, which is the Re and others that expand on this idea of the Re, which is your relationship with the gift or the Yerusha. You can rid yourself of a Matana much more easily, but you can also lose that right much more easily. But the Yerusha, it takes more to rid yourself of it, but it also is a stronger bind between you and the Yerusha that you can actually re-exercise that right later on. All right, that's as far as the Braita is concerned. Now, the Gemara wants to know, what's the reasoning behind the machloket here between Rabbi and the Chachamim with regards to passive appreciation of the estate? Maita mayo de Rabbanan. What's the reasoning behind the Rabbanan? Damakra, latet lo pishnayim. It says to give him a double portion. Matana kariya rachmana. The Torah calls it a gift. Ma matana de matili adei. Just like by a gift, until it reaches his hand. Afchelik b'chora de matili adei. Similarly with the Bechora, until it comes into his hand. Again, here you can formulate it in one of two ways. By a gift, the way that the Rashbam says it, a person who wants to grant a gift can only grant the gift when it's in his possession. Can't grant a gift when it's not in your possession. That means that the father who's giving this gift to his eldest son and giving him the double portion, it needs to be in his possession in order for him to give the double gift. If it comes after the fact, then he can't grant a matana after the fact when he didn't have it at the time of his passing. That's one way to formulate it. Or the other way to formulate it is a matana only goes into the possession of the individual once he has received it. But if he hasn't received it, then it's not his. So at the time of the passing of the deceased, then the Bechor takes Pishnayim because everything that's there, he can take possession of. It can come into his possession. Things that come in the future, he can't take possession of. So therefore, that is not a matana that he can take possession of. So either way you formulate it, that's what the Chachamim are saying. Everything that comes after the passing of the individual already is beyond the reach of the Bechor, because the relationship of the Bechor to the double portion is a matana. And matana requires either ownership now to be able to grant the matana, or it has to be here for you to receive it. Unless you physically receive it, there is no gift. You can't talk about a gift in the future. Rabbi Omer, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Pishnayim, a double portion. Mekish chelik bechora lechelik pashut. There is a hekesh between the two portions that the bechor receives. You're right, there might be a distinction between them, but since they are called a double portion, it means that there is a similarity or an equality between the two portions. Ma chelik pashut, afagav delo matli yodei. Just like by the case of the chelik pashut, everybody agrees that things that come into the estate after the passing of the individual are distributed to all the inheritors. That's what's called mishmush. That's the case where even in the kever, someone can bequeath something. So if a grandfather passes away after the father, that all that property comes to the father and then is distributed to the grandchildren because of the father. That father, even in the kever, is able to pass it. And af chelik b'chora, af agav delo matli yodei. Similarly, with the chelik b'chora, even if it's yet to reach his hand, it does get passed on. Now, obviously, there is a limit to that, because even Rabbi agrees that if it's ra'ui gamur, as the Rashbam says, kagon shishbichu yutomim, lo shako pishnayim, t'lohachi ani b'chol eshe yimatzei lo. Because there still is an offsetting pasuk, which is b'chol eshe yimatzei lo. That's that which is found in the estate already. So Rabbi is balancing between two psukim. One pasuk that says the chelik of the bechora is identical to the chelik of the pashut. On the other hand, he has b'chol eshe yimatzei lo is that which is currently in the estate. So that balance leads him to reconcile by saying, if it is something that's on the come completely, which is that it was invested in, they did something to create that appreciation, that's not yimatzei lo. That's not something that's found and the bechor can take a portion of. But if it's passive appreciation of the estate, that is included in this hekesh between the chelik of bechora and the chelik of the pashut. Chamim, on the other hand, say everything is a matana. Matana only works if it's here and here and now. Even passive appreciation is on the come, and that's not included in the matana. That's the view of the Chachamim versus Rabbi. Now, v'rabbonan anam iktiv pishnayim. What do the rabbonan do with the hekesh between the chelik of bechor and the chelik pashut? How the mitvelei achad mitzra. That comes to teach you that you join his double portion together. So for instance, in a case where there are three brothers plus a bechor, a total of four brothers, then you're going to have to break the estate up into five portions. The bechor will take two of those five portions. The remaining three brothers will take the other three portions. So now you're throwing lots to determine where they get their portions. So you can do this in one of two ways. You can throw five lots, and then each of the bechor just has two pieces in there, and his name will be picked out twice with two of the portions. If you do that, there's a possibility the Bechor could get two pieces of property that are not adjacent, that have nothing to do with each other. So that's what the Pishnayim comes to tell you. Don't separate the double portion. Basically, you have the Bechor take a portion that is a larger size, but it is adjacent to the other portion that he took. It's easier when you have like two brothers. You basically throw a lottery. You have three fields where you have two outer fields and an internal field. Then you throw a lottery for the brothers between the two outer fields. And then the Bechor will automatically take the middle field because then it'll be adjacent to him. You'd have to work out something similar when you have more brothers that the Bechor gets. Whenever he gets his portion, you'll get the adjacent portion as well with it. That's the way it works for them. That's the Hekesh between the Pashut and the Bechorah for the Chachamim. Rabbi Nami Aktiv Lateid Lo. What does Rabbi do with Lateid Lo, which is a Matana? Haoshi Mamar, Eni Notel, Be'eni Notein Rashai. This is where we got the reasoning behind why the Bechor can deny it, is because it is a Matana, and that goes back to everything we spoke about before, that is a Matana. Now, Rabbi Nami Aktiv Lateid Lo, Haoshi Mamar, Eni Notel, Be'eni Notein Rashai. What the Rashbam points out of there is, Lav Dafka Noket Lo. Ha'achad Amikra Lo Yofinan Le'el Misvoro. It's not a limud from the Pasuk, it's a logical argument.
Because even though Eni Notel is learned from the Pasuk, because that's because of it's a Matana, the Eni Notein is not learned from the Pasuk. It's a logical extension of the fact that he says Eni Notel, because it's a Matana, then he has a right to say Eni Notein, that I'm not going to give. And so it's just brought down Agav Grora, or the way that the Rashbam says it, the only time he's going to reject the Matana of the Bechorah is when there's an obligation associated with it. And he'll only say any Notel in a case where he doesn't want to be Notain.
The Rashbam over here points out, wait a minute, where did the Rabbanan learn the din of Matana from? And where does Rabbi learn out the din of Echad Metzra? Because they need to learn those din as well, but they've already used those psukim. So the Rashbam says over here, V'rabbonon name tarte shma mina. The Rabbanan learn out two things from there. Midechtiv latet. From the word latet, shmeina de matana kari rachmana. That the Torah calls it a matana. Ven yocholitein ad at the yode. Umidechtiv lo, latet lo, shmeina de lo zacha ba bechor at shedavoli yado. The bechor doesn't take possession until it reaches his hand. Shemar eni notel, then he is rashai. So there's two pieces to that. It's, first of all, it's called a matana. And number two is that he can deny it is because lo, until it reaches him, it's not considered to be the Chalek HaBechorah, and that's why he can deny it. And the same thing, the other way around with Rabbi, who says, Pishnayim, comes to teach you that the Chalek of the Pashut and the Chalek of the Bechor are equated. Where does he learn out this idea of Chad Metzra? Rabbi Yiklameimar, the Hachzvara Nami, the Chad Metzra, Nafkalei Mehekesha. He learns it out of the Hekesh as well. The Hekesh teaches you both items. Hekesh teaches you that they're of equal nature, but also teaches you that he gets his two portions adjacent to each other. So that's how we deal with it. So now we have Amar Rav Papa. So it's not clear how Rav Papa fits in over here, because Rav Papa could either be saying, what you just explained in the position of the Chachamim and Rabbi is wrong. You tried to explain the logic behind their positions by bringing their drashot to the psukim, and Rav Papa could be arguing on that and saying, that's just wrong. I'm going to show you a different way to view their machloket. Or you could be, Rav Papa could be going back to the first line of today's daf, which is Mani, who's the author of the Braita, Rabihi. Could be that Rav Papa says no, it could be the Rabbanan. So those are the two possible ways to read Rav Papa. Am Rav Papa, Dikla Va'alim, if you have a palm tree and it grows or thickens out, Ara Va'asik Sirton, if you have a plot of land and then it was flooded or the river overflowed and deposited earth there, or good things to fertilize the ground. No machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi in that case. Everyone agrees that the Bechor gets a double portion there. That is considered to be appreciation that is so embedded in the item that it's not considered to be separate from the item. A tree growing happens without any thought, any intervention. It can't be considered a separate entity from the core tree at the time of the passing of the individual. The person passed away. They're working on distributing the assets. A year later, they come back. The tree's bigger. So now you're going to say that he shouldn't get a double portion in the tree. Why not? What happened there that all of a sudden he shouldn't get the double portion? It happened so much so as a part and parcel of the asset itself that there's no reason. The same thing with regards to the land here. The land's quality got better, but nothing changed about the land. Nobody did anything. It's the same plot of land. It's the same name of land. It's just simply that the quality of the land improved because it got flooded or because there were deposits onto the land. In that case, even the Chachamim agree that the Bechor gets a double portion. So that's what we said. One way to explain Rav Papa is now to say that the Chachamim could be the author of the Braita, because even they agree in certain instances that passive appreciation is subject to the double portion. Keep Lige. So then where is the machloka between the Chachamim and the Rabbi? Bichafura v'hava shuvali. It's a case where it was, I would call it stubble or small green shoots, shachat, and then it grew into shibolim, into full stalks or full maturation. So that's a question. Originally, you have things that are emerging from the ground, growing from the ground, little green shoots. Then by the time they get back, we're talking about full mature grain. We're talking about things that are already stalks and sheaves that are coming out of the ground. Shlofafei vavu tamre. A case where either the tree was flowering, blossoming, or a case where they have immature dates, and then they grow and mature into full-fledged dates. So Mar Savar Shvocha de Memeilo, Rabbi holds, it all happened passively. It's nothing changed over here. You didn't do anything. You didn't invest anything. The dates went from their blossom or from their immature state to a mature state. Nothing you did. Nothing you invested. It all happened by itself. And similarly with the grains that were emerging. They grew to maturation without you doing anything. Umar Savar Ishtane. Chamim, on the other hand, say you have a change over here. So hearing from this, you understand maybe the logic of the Chachamim, which is when you have a tree or a palm tree that grows, it's a palm tree, and it's a palm tree. When you saw it the first time it was a palm tree, the second time you see it was a palm tree, that's why the Bechor gets a double portion, because there's nothing that changed. Then you see a palm tree that is blossoming or has immature dates on it. Then they grow to full maturation. You went from having a tree with flowers on it to a tree that now has dates, which are a separate entity. And therefore, since they are defined separately, that is no longer considered to be passive appreciation, even though it happened passively. Since it changed its name or it's distinguishable, you don't get a double portion in that distinguishable asset. That's what the Chachamim say. On the other hand, Rabbi says, nothing changed. It's still the same palm tree. The dates grew by themselves. You didn't make any investments. You didn't add anything there. And therefore, you get a right to a double portion in that. And basically, the way that the Rav Papa is explaining it is either that they're arguing in the Pasuk of Imatzelo, that which is found. What is considered to be found on the assets of the estate? What is considered to be present already? How much of the principal needs to be there in order for its derivatives to be considered a part and parcel of the principal? So in a case by land, and it has flooded over, everybody agrees it's the same principal property, nothing's changed. By a palm tree that grows into a bigger palm tree, everybody agrees. The palm tree that was there is the same palm tree that's here now, and therefore everybody agrees you get a double portion. When the item changes, that's the question. Is that considered already to have been there? Because the principal, the core thing was there beforehand. So the palm tree was there, or the blossoms were there, therefore the dates are considered to be just a continuation of that, or do we see them as a separate entity, and that's the position of the Chachamim. What's not clear from the position of the Chachamim, and would be very hard to deal with, is what happens when you have like the dates afterwards. So at the time when they got the property, it was blossoming, or there were immature dates on it. By the time they get to splitting it, they're full-fledged mature dates. So the Chachamim say the Bechor doesn't get a double portion. He doesn't get a double portion in the mature dates. Does he get a double portion in the blossoms or in the immature dates? Because at that point, that was the cutoff point. That's when they got the assets of the estate. When you do that, do you say that he's just denied completely that date at all, and that includes the flowers and the immature date? Or do you say, no, you have to cut it off at whatever time they got the property and then figure out what's the difference in value between a palm tree carrying blossoms and immature dates versus a palm tree with dates on it, and the Bechor will get a double portion on the first part, but not on the second part. That's not clear from the position of the Chachamim. But again, Rav Papa could either be arguing about the source for the argument between them, which is Bechor Asher Yimatzei Lo, versus the arguments that were brought above to explain their machloket, or he could be simply saying, Mani Rabihi, the Braita could even be the Chachamim, with more limited scope, but the Chachamim agree in certain instances that the Bechor gets a double portion in passive appreciation. Amar Rabba Barchan, Amar Rabbi Chia, Asa kedivrei Rabbi, asa. Kedivrei Chachamim, asa. This is familiar to us in other places in Shas. For instance, the Gemara in Brachot, with regards to the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim of times of davening, says, the Ovid Kemar Ovid, the Ovid Kemar Ovid. You do like this one, you do like that one, you can do. It's up to you. There's no psak halacha given by the Gemara. You can choose your psak. That's how the Gemara concludes by Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Also over here, the Gemara is concluding, you want to do like Rabbi? Go ahead. You want to do like the Chachamim, go ahead. I mean that they're both positions that are valid positions. As the Rashbam points out over here, if a posek or a dayan. Possums like one of them, we're not going to say that he's a toev dvar mishnah. We're going to say that these are valid opinions that he can rely on, and either one of them is valid. Mesvakale, the reason they say this is because they're left in a safek. Ialocha kerabi michaviro, velo michavirav. Ialocha kerabi michaviro, vafilu michavirav. So this references to the Gemara and Erevin on Daf Mem Vav. Gemara and Erevin Daf Mem Vav gives you a list of rules about psak halacha. When there are different machlokot, we favor one party over the other. One of those is halacha kirabi michaveiro. The halacha is like rabbi over other parties, other tanaim. The question that they have here is a fake. When we say halacha kirabi michaveiro, does that mean only when rabbi is a one-on-one? So when rabbi is a tana versus another single tana, then he wins, he trumps. But in a situation where there are rabbim against him, he doesn't have the power to overcome the rabbim. We have a simpler concept, a Rabbi Akiva. Halacha k'Rabbi Akiva, mechaveiro, velo mechaveirav. So here the Gemara says we have a safek about Rabbi's power in the psak halacha, and power in those rules of psak halacha. Does Rabbi only overcome another single individual, or does he overcome the Rabbim as well? It's a very difficult question of the Gemara. As the Balei Tosaf will point out, it's clear in Shas that we only say halacha k'Rabbi mechaveiro. Velo mechaveirav. It's not ever a question. The Gemara always assumes it's mechaveiro, velo mechaveirav. So the way the Rashbam reads it is that it's a fundamental safek in this rule of psak. But the way the Balei Tosfot would say, I don't understand, Tema. The Bekulei Gemara Omer, Dein Halacha K'Rabbi mechaveirav, Halacha Misvagalei. Why is there a safek here when the rest of the Shas, the Gemara takes it as a granted that the Halacha is K'Rabbi mechaveiro and not mechaveirav. So what does he say it to? The Rav Nachman didei amar afilu mechaveirav. We're going to see in 1 second. The Rav Nachman says that the halacha is like Rabbi, and even overcomes his chaverim. The kaimelan k'Rav Nachman medine. And generally, passing like Rav Nachman. That means that Rav Nachman over here is declaring Rabbi powerful enough to overcome the rabbim. So, mefresh Rabbeinu Tam, the dofka halacha misvakalei el ba'amalo. The suffix is this case in particular, not in any other case. And similar with Rav Nachman, then he goes on to ask some questions about it, but he says this safek is local, it is not a general principle. Everywhere else in Shas, halacha k'Rabbi mechaveiro. Over here, maybe halacha k'Rabbi mechaveirav, because Rabbi's position is more logical, or something that has strong backing to it, and therefore maybe we would say over here that Rabbi's position overcomes the chaveirim, but it's unique to this circumstance. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it. And then on the hand, where he says, "Venir the re, the ochem is fakale. Yelach k'rabi mechaviro, velo mechavirav shepasku kach behedya." Was that explicit or not explicit? When they said "alach k'rabi," did they say "alach k'rabi mechaviro"? And then we know v'nat chavirav, or did they simply say "alach k'rabi"? And then we afterwards modified it or add on a qualifier that's only mechaviro. So that's the question over here: how explicit is the statement that the alach k'rabi is limited to chaviro? Is it something that is a part and parcel of that halachic psak, which is halachic rabbi mechaviro, that's the mesorah we got? Or is the mesorah that we got halachic rabbi? Then we later on went on to say, it's mechaviro velo mechaviro. An obvious difference would be, how binding is this idea of halachic rabbi mechaviro? If it was said explicitly, then you can't do anything about it. If it's simply halachic rabbi and we're qualifying it, then if there's a mistake made, maybe there's more room to maneuver. So that's the way the Reed deals with it, and reconciling it with the rest of Shas. Then now, the Gemara continues. Am Rav Nachman am Rav. So again, this is more unusual. Generally, Rav Nachman quotes Shmuel, because Rav Nachman's a Talmud of Shmuel. Although, he does found on occasion to quote Rav, but in probably 3 or 4 times the amount of times, Rav Nachman quotes Shmuel rather than Rav. Osur lasot k'divei Rabbi. Osur the paskin like Rabbi. Kasavar. Because he believes, halacha k'Rabbi mechaveiro, velo mechaveirav. Because it's clear here that Rav believes, when you say halacha k'rabbi, that is on a one-on-one basis, that's not against the rabbim. Rav Nachman didei amar, Rav Nachman himself says, mutar lasot k'divei rabbi. You're allowed to paskin like rabbi. Kasavar, he must hold halacha k'rabbi mechaveiro, ve'afilu mechaveirav. Rav Nachman clearly believes that halacha is like rabbi, overcoming an individual, but also overcoming the rabbim. That's what the Balei Tosafot just pointed out. Rav Nachman sides with saying that Rabbi has power to overcome the Rabbim here, even though the rest of Shas, we don't find anything like that. That was one of his questions. So now, what's interesting over here is the language that is used. Rav Nachman says it's mutar lasot k'divei Rabbi. What does that mean? It's mutar lasot k'divei Rabbi. If you believe Alocha Karabi Michaveiro Vichaveirav, then why isn't it Tzarich Lasot Karabi? You must Paskin like Rabbi. Why is it Mutar Lasot Karabi? So you could argue that he is just responding to what Rav said. Rav said Asur Lasot. So he's just responding and saying Mutar Lasot. So it's just a parallel language and don't make a big deal out of it. Or you could argue that even Rav Nachman over here, who says Alocha Karabi Michaveiro Vafilu Michaveirav, doesn't mean that that is a halacha kavua that says that the halacha really is like Rabbi over Chavirav. Rather, it's just giving us a window to say that if you paskin like Rabbi, it's mutar. We allow it in this case because he overcomes his Chavirav. Not that that is the ikar psak, or it is necessarily what we would say the chachirat chila. Amar Rava, Rava says, asur lasot kedivrei Rabbi. It's not permitted to do like Rabbi. V'imasa asui. But if he does it, it's done. So in that case, you would have something similar to what Rav Nachman just said. If he says, Mutar laso kedivei Rabbi, Rava just formulates the other way around, which is, Asur laso kedivei Rabbi, v'masa, but if he did it, b'diavad, asui, then it's good. Kasavar, he thinks, Matin Itmar. Matin Itmar means that we lean towards that way. We don't explicitly say the halacha is that way, but we lean towards that individual. That is what the Rashbam says over here. Matinat din achar divrei chachamim. We lean the halacha towards the chachamim, which means the chatchila we're going to pass on like the chachamim. But we're not going to explicitly pass on like them, so therefore if you pass on like Rabbi b'diavad, you are okay. The Baal HaTos Sofot do not like this, because matin in general in Shas refers to the subject of the discussion beforehand. Over here, the subject of the discussion is Rabbi. And therefore, the matin should relate to Rabbi and not to the chachamim. But the way that the Rishbam is explaining it, the matin is saying that we are noted aloha ke the chachamim. But they weren't the subject of the whole discussion before. It's Rabbi. We're trying to decide is aloha like Rabbi or not. And if someone says matin, matin sounds like we are noted towards Rabbi's position. So therefore, it's a difficult way to understand it here. Although you can see here that the Rishbam and maybe even the Baal HaTosafot had an alternate girsa, which was Amar Rava, Hilchato ke Rabbi. And that's what would make the matin even more problematic, which is he's saying, the halacha is kirabi, v'masa asui, and therefore b'diavad, if you do like rabbi, it's okay. And then he says, matin itmar is lechatchila. And they were saying the lechatchila is going on the rabbonon instead of rabbi, who is the subject of the whole statement of rabbi before, that the halacha is like rabbi, at least b'diavad. And then you say matin, which references to the position of the chachamim. That's what the Tosafot. And before dealing with this issue about halacha mirabi mechaveirav, how strong is that position? And that's what he says over here, of al-ktzat kasho. And then he asks from Rav Nachman, who says mutar lasot, instead of tzarich lasot or chayav lasot. And he also brings up this issue of matin. He says, b'chol gemara lo kamar matin, ala oto shepasak halacha kemoto. We only use matin like the one halacha is like. Over here he's saying that if you did like rabbi, you're okay. And then matin. Matin should have referred to the chachamim, so it should have been the other way. Do like the chachamim lechatchila, because we're matin like the chachamim. But he phrased it the other way around. You shouldn't do like Rabbi. If you did like him, it's b'diavad, and therefore it's matin. It's the backwards from everywhere else in Shas. So that's why he comes along to explain, like the re before, which is the safek here, is when we say halacha k'rabbi mechaveiro, how explicit is that statement? And based on that, these amoraim over here are based on that safek trying to deal with it. So they're not saying that the halacha is definitely like Rabbi mei chaveirav. They're simply saying if it says halacha mei rab like Rabbi, and it didn't mention chaveiro, then we have a little more latitude to give you room to paskin like Rabbi here, even though there's a rabbim. If it explicitly said it halacha Rabbi mei chaveiro, then we would have no latitude. And that's basically what they're saying over here. Even Rav Nachman, who paskins halacha Rabbi mei chaveirav, it's not really saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Mechavei, it says mutar lasot k'rabi. It's okay to deal with Rabbi because of the fact that it only says halacha k'rabi. And the modifier, the qualifier of chaveiro was added on afterwards. That's us saying that. So since it's a weaker qualifier, then we can say, if you paskin like Rabbi, it's mutar. We'll lean towards the chachamim, but if you paskin like Rabbi, it's okay. So that's how the Baal HaTosafot deal with this difficulty in the Gemara. All right, so now Tani Rav Nachman, Bishar Sifrei Debei Rav. Rav Nachman now says over in the remainder of the Sifrei Debei Rav, as you look in the Rishbam over here, he explains what are the Sifrei Debei Rav. He is learning Rav literally to mean Rav, the Amora. And he says that Sifrei Debei Rav, Hainu Torat Kohanim. Sifra, the Sifra as we know it, are the Midrashei Halacha on the Torah. The Midrash HaHalacha, instead of like the Gemara, which organizes things topically, the Midrash HaHalacha go pasuk by pasuk in the Torah, and they give the same drashot that you find in the Gemara, but instead of being organized topically, they're organized by the psukim in the Torah, Torah Shebichtav. Those are the Midrash HaHalacha. There are three Midrash HaHalacha. There is the Midrash HaHalacha on Shmot that is called the Mechilta. There is Midrash HaHalacha on Vayikra, which is called the Sifra, or Torah Kohanim. And then there is a Midrash HaHalacha on Bamidbar and Dvarim together, which is known as the Sifrei. What the Rishbam is pointing out is that Safra de Beirav, Hainu Torah Kohanim. We say Sifra de Beirav, that is Torah Kohanim. That's the Midrash HaHalacha on Vayikra. And therefore, Shar Sifrei de Beirav, the Shar Sifrei de Beirav references to the Midrash Shel Sefer Bamidbar and Dvarim. So when we say Shar Sifrei de Beirav, it means the Sifrei. Because the Iker one is Torah Kohanim. The other Sifra, or the other Sefer, is Bamidbar and Dvarim. Umechilta and Umidrash Shel Shmot. Mechorjazem and Sofa Sefer. And all of them are called Shar Sifrei de Beirav. The remainders, the ones that are not the Sifra, are called the other Midrashei Halacha of Rav. Vainu Darminim Ba'alma, Stam Matnitin Rabbi Meir, Stam Sifra Rabbi Yehuda, Stam Sifrei Rabbi Shimon, Stam Seder Olam Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta, Stam Tosefta Rabbi Nechemia V'kulan Alibid Rabbi Kiva. These are the Talmidim Rabbi Kiva. When you have no authorship or no attribution in the Sifra or in the Sifrei, we know from that that the Stam Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, and the Stam Sifrei is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So if you have no attribution, we will assume that they are the author of those positions, Kulan Alibid Rabbi Kiva. So that is the way that you learn. If you look in the Rambam, I mean, Zaktama Le Mishneh Torah, over there he speaks about the Mesorah. And he speaks about the Mesorah moving through the Talmidei Chachamim, and that there are 40 Talmidei Chachamim from Moshe Rabbeinu until Rav Ashi, 40 generations or 40 individuals, really, between the time that Moshe received it on Sinai and the closing of the Gemara, or Rav Ashi in the Gemara, to show you how tight the Mesorah is. In there, he writes that Rav was the author of the Sifra and the Sifrei. These are Rav's collections of the Tanaic works, the things that he put together. So literally, when we speak about Rav, we're speaking about Rav. The other way to explain it is Sifra de Beirav. Beirav is the Beit Midrash. These were the Midrashei Halacha that were commonly found in the Beit Midrash. They were well known. These were Tanaic works or Tanaic positions that were commonly used in the Beit Midrash. So that's another way to explain it over here, that Shar Sifra de Beirav is the Midrashei Halacha that were found in the Beit Midrash. Again, the Rishbam and the Rambam in his Hakdama Mishneh Torah seemingly think that it's literally Rav and not just the Beit Midrash. B'chol asher yimatzei lo. So here it's a pasuk from Devarim in Parashat Ki Teitzei. So that's why it's the Sifrei that we're speaking about, the Midrash Halacha. Prat, the Shevach shish bichu yoshim nachar mitat aviyem. That comes to exclude a case of the Shevach that was increased by the inheritors of the estate. Aval, Shevach sheshibchu nechasim nachar mitat aviyem, shakil. On the other hand, if it's Shevach that happened by itself or passively, he takes it. Umani, who's the author of that position in the Sifrei, in the Midrash Halacha? Obviously, it's Rabbi He, because here you have a distinction being made between invested or active appreciation of the estate versus passive appreciation of the estate. That's a distinction that is found in Rabbi's position, and that's what they're saying over here, that Rabbi is the author of that position. Tani Rami Bar Chama Bishar Sifrei de Beirav. Now we have another alternative Midrash Halacha, which is B'chol Asher Yimatzei Lo, Prat the Shevach Sheshibchu Nechasim Nachar Mitat Aviyem. That comes to exclude any appreciation of the assets after the death of the father. B'chol Shekein Shevach Sheshibchu Yoshim Nachar Mitat Aviyem. The Lo Shakel. And certainly, if you're talking about active appreciation of the estate, that certainly the Bechor doesn't get a double portion. Umani, who would be the ad author of that position, would be the Rabbanan. But there's no distinction between passive and active appreciation of the estate. That will be the position of the Rabbanan. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Ein Bechor notel pishnayim b'milve. A Bechor does not have a right to collect a double portion in debts that are outstanding to the estate. Debtors that owe money to the estate, when they pay back that money, the Bechor does not get a double portion. Laman, who's this according to? Ilei Mother Rabbanan. If this is according to the Rabbanan, Ashta Shvacha Deite Bishutei Amri Rabbanan Lo Shakil. If you say that the assets that are in hand and they appreciate passively, You don't get any rights to that according to the Rabbanon. Milva mibaye? In a case where you have debts that are being repaid into the estate, why would you think the Chachamim think you should get anything? Elo the Rabbi. Must be Rabbi. Veleha, the Tanya. So then what are you going to do with the Braita? Yeshush Tarchov, Bechor Notel Pishnaim, Ben Bemilve, Ben Beribit. That we have a Braita that says when you inherit a Shtarchov, the Bechor takes a double portion, both in the underlying debt outstanding, as well as the interest that is owed. We're assuming here that the interest is paid by a non-Jew, so it's permitted interest. And a Bechor gets a double portion, not only in the principal amount, but even in the interest. Mani, lo Rabbi, velo Rabbanon. Here it can't be either Rabbi nor the Rabbanon, because you just said before, Ein Bechor Notel Pishnaim Bemilve. If you say it's the Rabbanon, it's so obvious. So he must be saying this in the position of Rabbi. So if he's saying this in the position of Rabbi, then what do you do with this Braita that says that they got a Shtarchov, the Bechor gets a double portion both in the Milve and in the Ribit? Mani, it's low Rabbi, it can't be Rabbi, you just told me that Rabbi doesn't allow you to take a double portion in the debt. The Lord Rabbanon, it can't be the Rabbanon. It says, no, Olam the Rabbanon, Beitzrich. So we have to go back now and say, when you say, Ein Bechor Notel Pishnaim Bemilva, that's the Rabbanon, and I need it. Salka Das Chamina, Milva. Kevi the Nokit Shtara, Kaman the Gavya, Damya. Since he's holding the document in hand, it's as if collected. Kamash Malan, that we don't say that. That's the source for the Rabbeinu Gershom's position before. Why does Rabbi believe that a Shtar Chov, you get a double portion in it? Because it's Kaman the Gavya, Dami. And what do you see over here when you, the Chachamim who say you don't get a double portion is because it's Lav Keman Degav Yodamya. It's not like it's as if collected. So therefore, the Rabbanon are of the position that you don't get a double portion in the debt. We need to point that out because you couldn't believe even according to the Chachamim that it was already in the estate because it's as if collected. The answer is that it's not as if collected, and that's the machloket between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Do you view the debt as if collected or not? The author of the Braita that says that you get a Pishnaim both in the debt and in the interest, that's going to be Rabbi, as well as the bright that we had previously that says you get a double portion in the debts. The fact that the Gemara here says that it's not like Rabbi and not like the Rabbanon, instead of offering up what would have been a simple solution to say that it's Rabbi, but there's a distinction between it's a Milva Bishtar and Milva Alpeh, shows you that the Gemara doesn't see the distinction that the Rashbam drew on the previous Amud. The Rashbam over there said that the Milva Alpeh and Milva Bishtar are different. Even Rabbi would agree by Milva Alpeh that it's not considered to be Mukzak. And if that's the case, you could easily have answered who's the author of this Braita. The fact that the Gemara does not entertain that, according to many Rishonim, shows you that the Rashbam is wrong or incorrect, and that Milva Alpeh is no different than a Milva Bishtar. Although you could argue that simply if that was the case, Shmuel should have been more explicit in saying that it's a Milva Alpeh, and defined what he was speaking about then rather than just speaking about a generic Milva. So now the Gemara says, Shalchu Mitam, they sent from over there, and they sent over from Eretz Yisrael, Bechor Notel Pishnaim Bemilve Avalo Beribit. Bechor takes a double portion in the debt, but not in the interest. Laman, again, according to whom is this said? Ilay Melo Rabbonon, if you say it's the Rabbonon, Ashta Shvacha, De'ite Birshute, Amri Rabbonon Delo Shakil, in a case where it's assets that are here already, and they're appreciating, we don't give him that value or a double portion in that, Milve Mibayi, a debt that's going to be collected in the future, that you're going to tell me he gets a double portion in it? Elo the Rabbi. So now that's according to Rabbi. Or the Rabbi beribit lo. You're going to say by Rabbi that he doesn't get to collect rebit? You just had a braita before that said you collect both the milve and the rebit, and we said that was Rabbi. Now we have a braita that says collect the milve and not the rebit, and you're saying that's Rabbi. So how do you deal with that? Vatanya Rabbi Omer b'chol notel pishnayim ben b'milve ben b'ribit. Here we have it explicit that Rabbi says that the Bechor gets a right to collect a double portion, not only in the underlying debt that is collected, but even in the rebit, even in the interest that is being collected. It says, Olam Rabbonon hi, Umilve Keman Degav Yodamya. This is according to the Rabbonon, and therefore according to the Rabbonon, we view the milve as if collected. Now that is differentiated from rebit, from interest, because when it comes to the principal amount of the loan, he handed out cash to the individual, and now they're getting cash back. With regards to the rebit, that's not something where he gave him cash originally and now he's getting cash back. That's a new asset. That's a new item that's being created. And therefore the Bechor gets a double portion in the principal amount that is returned, but he does not get a double portion in the rebit. Or you can argue that the principal amount has collateral underlying it, and therefore it's considered to be mukzak or as if collected. The rebit doesn't have underlying collateral associated with it, and therefore it's not deemed to be as if collected. So here you see what I mentioned before, that the bright on the previous amud, the Rashbam said that that case was only according to Rabbi. The case where it says the Bechor gets a double portion in the debt. That's only according to Rabbi. But the Chachamim would disagree. Because it has to do with the Shevach Memeila. It has to do with whether it's passive appreciation of the estate. If you reformulate it like the Gemara is doing here, which is the question of Shtar Chov, is a question if it's considered as if collected or not, even the Chachamim can agree. And that's what we see here, that the Chachamim agree that you can collect the milva, you get a double portion in that, because it's a mandagavya damya. So the way that the Rashbam explained it, it made it that it could only be Rabbi. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explained it, that even according to Chachamim, you could claim that it was Keman Degavya Damya, and therefore, even the Chachamim would agree that Bechor gets a double portion there. And once you do that, it's clear here that this argues on the previous statement of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, although Rashbam brings down Rishonim that tried to reconcile by saying one of them was a Jewish borrower and one of them was a non-Jewish borrower, and therefore there would be a difference in the collection of the rebate. On the other hand, the Rashbam says it doesn't play out well because there, the collection of the Karen would be just the opposite. By the Goy, where you have a right to collection of rebate, there's less likelihood that you're going to actually collect the debt or the principal amount. Versus the Israel, where it's a sword to collect the rebate, where you have a more or higher likelihood of collecting the principal amount. And he says, so that reconciliation doesn't work. And therefore, you have to say that the Shalchut Mitam clearly argue on Amar Yehuda or Shmuel. So Gemara says, Amar Lei Rav Acha Barav the Ravina. Ikla Meimar La'atrin. Meimar showed up in our city. Bedorish, and he began to be Dorish. Bechor notel pishnayim bimilve elo beribit. Bechor gets a double portion in the outstanding debts, but not in the rebit, the interest that is collected. Amar Lei Nardai Litamayu. That is the people from Narda that have their own reasoning or they're consistent in their psak. Da'amar Rabba. And here the Bach reverses the positions that are brought here, but we'll read it just the way we have it in the Gemara, which is Dama Rabba, Gavu Karka Yeshlo, Gavu Ma'ot Eino. Rabba says that if you collect land for the collection of the debt, then the Bechor gets a double portion. Gavu Ma'ot, if they collected cash, Eino, he does not get a double portion. Rav Nachman Amar, Rav Nachman says, Gavu Ma'ot, if you collected cash, Yeshlo, then he gets a double portion. Gavu karka, Eino. Now then, if they collected land, you do not get a portion. So let's just start here. First of all, Rav Nachman and Amemar are both from Narda. So the simplest way to read this is that Amemar and Rav Nachman are of the same position. And that's what they're saying over here. Amemar is paskining similar to Rav Nachman because they're both from Narda. And they both have this same position, that when you collect the money, it's as if collected already. And therefore, you get a double portion in it. By Karka, that's not the case. Now, Rabba is from Pumpadita, and so then Rabba's position wouldn't necessarily align with the Narda. On the other hand, if you look in the Rashbam, he says, Amemar k'Rav Nachman s'virlei t'rvayu avi min Narda. So that's the simplest way to read it. He says, V'linira, says, I think, Dada Arminu Narda l'tamayu lo balamayi divrei Rabba. It's not coming to say that Rabba's position does not align with their position. Because he says you take from land and not from ma'ot. Because a Maimar just made a stam, made a statement without any qualification. He made a statement that you have a right to collect a double portion in the milveh. He doesn't say whether that's from karka or from ma'ot. And that's what Rav Nachman and Rabba are arguing about. Can you only take that from karka? Or can you only take that from ma'ot? But not that they necessarily disagree with a Maimar. They're coming to explain or define or qualify what a Maimar gets to collect. A Maimar svirlei k'dishalchu mitam. And what the point is the Me'ute Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. It comes to go against what we saw from Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Ein Bechor Notel Pishnayim B'Milveh. That statement that we saw before, that's what he's coming to undermine. A Meimar saying, that's wrong. And he holds like Shalchu Mitam, that they had gotten from over there, that the loch is that you get the Milveh and not the rebit. So that's all that a Meimar is doing according to the Rashbam. Now, what is the reasoning behind Rabban Rav Nachman's Machloket as to whether the Bechor gets a double portion? So Rabba's position that says when you collect karka, you get it. When you collect money, you don't get it. That's because when you have a shtar outstanding, the shtar entitles you to a lien on the property of the debtor. That lien, if you exercise it, then is as if you had owned the property all along because that lien gives you rights in the property. And then if he defaults on the loan and you take the property, it was as if the property was always there, because that was the lien. Now then, if he repays the debt to you, that's money that's coming in that wasn't there before. Instead of giving you the karka, he's giving you cash. And in giving you cash, that's something new, or that's new assets in the estate. Because the shtar entitles you to a right of collection, but it doesn't give you that collection. If it's property, then yes, it's as if collected, because the shtar gives you a right or a lien on the property. That's the way Rabba views it. But Nachman says the opposite. If you collect cash, then you get a double portion. You collect karka, then you don't get a double portion. The way that the Rishbam explains it is because he lent him money, he didn't lend him karka. So when he pays back with money, then he's paying back what the loan was. So now he's getting back the cash that was laid out, and therefore it's considered to be as if it was the asset of the estate. On the other hand, with karka is only if you default on the loan do you get karka. That's not the primary mechanism of payment. That's as if you defaulted on the loan. Now all of a sudden you get karka. That's because you have no choice and you're forced into take the karka. That wasn't your primary means of collection. So therefore, that's why, according to the Rishbam, Rav Nachman believes, you get cash back, the Bechor gets a double portion, because that's the way things were supposed to work. Mm-hmm. And you lent out money, now you're getting money back. Those are assets of the estate. Repeat, that's a new asset. And karka, that's something that you weren't counting on. You were counting on getting your cash back. Instead, you got karka. That's not what you had planned for. That's considered also to be a new asset. And therefore, you don't get a double portion in the karka. The Balei HaTosfot to bring down the pshat of the Rishbam and say, Ve'ein Nira. Doesn't make sense. Because we see a similar distinction that's drawn by Nezikin, and in Nezikin, the logic of the Rishbam does not work. Because over there, there was no money that was laid out that you're expecting money back. Elanira, the time of the Rav Nachman, he gives the reason behind Rav Nachman, Damar, Govam Oot Yeshlo, Mishum de Derech, Balchov Lifroa, Bechovam Ma'ot, Velo Karka. Since a Balchov in general pays with cash and not with land, Babi Muchsak, Begavo Ma'ot, Mishum de Smiche Alayu. It's as if he had possession of the money because people rely on that. They are depending on that. The karka that's not the primary means of payment or repayment, they don't really think of that as being theirs now or as if they collected it because they're not relying on it. It's a backup. It's not what they intended for originally, but rather it is the backup or the way that you get compensated if he defaults on the loan. And therefore, they favor saying that when people lend money, their expectation is that they're going to get cash back. That is the primary means of compensation or return is the cash. That's what they rely on. The karka is just backup. That is not their primary means of compensation. So the way the Rashbam formulates it is that since you lent money and you're getting money back, it's the same asset. The problem the Balei HaTosafot have with that is that everywhere else in Shas it says, milveh lehotzah nitnah. When you lend out money, the money's gone. Nobody expects you to give the exact same coins back. They expect you to give equivalent value back. So the way the Rashbam's formulated, you handed out money, you got money back, it's the same asset. It isn't the same asset. It's a totally different asset. Because you gave out coins, and then he's returning you other coins or other value that is the equivalent of those coins in other coins. That's not considered to be an asset that stays. Rather, the Balei HaTosafot say that the entitlement of repayment means that you already consider it as if collected, the cash, because that's what you're relying on. You're relying on getting that cash back. The karka, which is just if you default, that you won't count on because he has yet to default or you have yet to go and collect the karka, so we don't consider that to be mukzak. On the other hand, if he pays with cash, we consider you to be mukzak in that because that was what you were depending on. And for the Rishbam, it's because you gave out cash, you got cash back. You didn't give out cash. You give out cash, you get karka back. That's a totally different asset. It's not the same asset class that you're getting back. And that's why Rav Nachman says that if you get money paid back, your core gets a double portion. Get karka back, you don't get a double portion. Okay, we're going to stop here. Two lines from the bottom of Kuchav Dalet Amud Bet.